Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:21 PM Pacific Summer Time, and today is May 4th. And it was a big day today in the commodity markets, in the bond markets, and in the currency markets. So, in fact, the equity markets were reasonably quiet. But let's kick off with oil prices. Brent crude broke below $50 today, and it was down really quite heavily. This is important. It's breaking the progression of higher reaction lows. And there are large questions now being asked about the sustainability of the OPEC oil cut, because Iran has been able to gain market share at Saudi Arabia's expense. And since they're fighting proxy wars on three fronts, then there is obviously quite a bit of competition between those two countries in particular. But that is also happening, that beggar thy neighbor attitude is also happening against a background where you have technological innovation, which has created a situation where onshore, unconventional supply in the US is now the global swing producer. Therefore, when we think about where is it that oil prices are likely to find a floor, then it is perhaps much more useful to think about at what point will that unconventional supply and the appetite for increased drilling dry up as prices fall. Certainly, we know that they are comfortably profitable above $50 a barrel. The question is, at what point does it become too painful to continue to invest in new drilling for those unconventional wells? And potentially, it's at 40, but we have evidence previously that it was at 30. Supposition, our belief for at least the last couple of years has been that we are now in for a prolonged ranging phase for oil prices, and that we are towards the upper side of that range. And until we have evidence to the contrary, the lower side of that range is between $30 and $40. That's a big deal. That has had a significant effect on the wider commodity sector. Now, the continuous commodity index broke downwards today. It is pushing down to new reaction lows and testing that 400 area. It has now failed to find support in the region of the trend mean and is plumbing the depths below it. What is needed is a clear upper dynamic, and we know what those look like. We've seen them previously. In the absence of a clear upper dynamic, then this is a breakdown from a well-defined range, and it is a failure to find support in the region of the trend mean, and we are going to go lower from here. The danger for the primary mining indices, which are the FTSE 350 and the ASX Resources Index in Australia, and indeed the Canadian Materials Index, although that has a lot of oil in it too, when we look at those, then the FTSE Mining Index is breaking below the 200-day moving average. Now, this is a larger reaction than we have seen in the context of what has been a very impressive recovery over the last 15 months, 16 months, in fact. And this is now breaking below the trend mean. It's already broken the progression of higher reaction lows. So it has lost a great deal of its uptrend consistency. If support is going to be found, it would want to be getting about it, and a clear upper dynamic is going to be required to confirm that demand is returning to dominance in here. And we can anticipate that when the ASX opens up tomorrow, then it is the resources index is going to be lower. Copper prices are back testing the $2.50 area. There's been quite a lot of volatility this week, considering that prices were as high as, they were over $2.60 at the beginning of the week, and they're now testing that $2.50 area. That is the lower side of the range that's been there since the beginning of November. And a break below it would open up the potential that we are going to have a much more choppy environment, that until these indices had broken below their 200-day moving averages, then we could have made the argument that this was a consolidation and that it was the first step above a type 2 bottom. and that so far those rangers had been really quite inert. That doesn't mean, though, that this isn't still a right-hand extension phase or first step above the Type 2 bottom, but that what we have seen previously, and we have ample evidence of, is that these right-hand extensions can be very volatile, and that is what is potentially now opening up the possibility of occurring when we see these commodities breaking below their respective trend means, that we're going to be in for a much more volatile environment. And when we look at, for example, the BlackRock World Mining Trust, then that has also broken down, but perhaps and you can see that it has a very similar chart pattern to the FTSE 350 mining index, and perhaps with a somewhat higher beta. If the commodity complex is coming down, it is not because of a strong dollar. In fact, what we have evidence of here is that the euro is getting stronger, that it is now up to almost 110. This was really quite a firm day today, not least because Macron is roundly considered to have won the French presidential election debate last night. What I think we can also see here is that there is a progression of higher reaction lows. There is increasing evidence that this is a failed downside break below 105. If we have a failed downside break and the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakdown, then the potential is that we're going to go right up and test the upper side of that range. And the upper side of the range is at 115. That is the potential outcome that we have in here. Now, the pound, despite the fact that there are some really there's some very loose talk about exactly what it is that or how the negotiations for Brexit are going to go through, and the bill for exiting has gone up from 60 billion to 100 billion in just the last day, so there's a lot of loose talk going about, but perhaps the more important point here is that the pound is also breaking out against the dollar, and it is up now towards 130. It has been able to bounce back, having encountered resistance around this level yesterday, and a sustained move below the 200-day moving average would be required to question potential for additional upside here. And that probably means that we should be looking at the euro pound, because both of those currencies are a bit steadier in here. But if we look here, what we're really seeing is that it is the euro is a little bit stronger than the pound, and the euro has found support in the region of the lower side of this range, and it's an almost a year-long range at this stage, and really a sustained move below 84p would be really required to really question that the euro isn't going to get a bit firmer against the pound, not least because the UK wants a weaker currency more than the Europeans do. Then what we're also beginning to see is that markets are beginning, and I really do hasten to emphasize that it is really only beginning to price in the potential for a rate hike in June. I think the most important point here is that the 3-month yield is at 87 basis points. The Fed funds rate is, their band for the interest rate is between 75 basis points and 1%. Now, at 87 basis points, it is not even halfway between that band. It means that the bond market has been very reluctant to price in even the remotest potential that the Fed would raise rates in June. And I've previously characterized this as a boy who cried wolf scenario, that the Fed is the boy who cried wolf. And now that they are indeed beginning to follow through on their long-awaited, they've been saying for at least 3 or 4 years they were going to raise rates aggressively, or at least more aggressively than zero, and now they are beginning to raise rates in a very modest fashion. And so many people have lost money by anticipating what the Fed was going to do that now it would hear that nobody is willing to do it. This is, I think, tantamount to the disbelief stage of the psychological perception stages of major bull and bear markets, which we discuss at length in the second day of the chart seminar. Well, this is about the clearest, the most profound example of that I've ever come across. And this is important because when we look at the price action, it looks like a completed base. And prices are remarkably low. And this is also something that we see, and it is that the price is already up 100%. And it could go, or the yield is up 100%, it could go up considerably more from here. And I don't believe that that is something that investors are willing to really consider. Now, when we look at the longer end of the curve, we've also had movement here. It is looking increasingly likely that we've had the failed downside break, that the yield has found support in the region of the trend mean, and it was up in a rather dynamic fashion in here today. It is coming back up towards this 2.4%. Above 2.4, then there is incontrovertible evidence that it is a failed downside break. And just like we've seen in a number of the other charts that we've been looking at, if you get this kind of failed downside break, then the chances are it is going to go back up and test that 2.6%, and then it could break out. Then you really have to start considering where are we in terms of the cycle, because bond yields have been coming down for 35 years, and that is a not just a generational long process. That is the kind of trend that changes the fundamentals of the market. That is something that's also, of course, something that we talk about in the chart seminar, that small moves, when you get a breakout from a range, it doesn't change the fundamentals, it changes the perception of the fundamentals. But really long trends change the fundamentals of the market. We have had a massive explosion in the supply of debt over the last 5 years. In fact, really since in the last 10 years, since the credit crisis. And a good share of that debt needs to be refinanced in the next 5 years. That has changed the fundamentals of the market, that with remarkably low yields, everybody and his dog is out there borrowing money because it is so cheap to borrow. And servicing those debts is not really problematic when businesses have been doing well. And at the same time, we've had the number of shares in issuance reduce considerably. There is regulatory obstacles to seeking IPOs. There's really no need to seek an IPO when interest rates are so low and private equity is so readily available. And then you have buybacks, and you have companies that are going private. And of course, companies go bust. So in fact, the number of shares in issuance, the number of companies that have got shares out there, has halved in the last 20 years. And that's a powerfully bullish fact for equity markets, that there is more money, if not at the very least the same amount of money, chasing a considerably reduced number of shares, and that helps to increase their value. That has also been one of the primary factors that has helped the stock market to do well. I know that these are perhaps topics that would be better discussed in the big picture audio, but I do think that they're important, because when we look at the stock market, the S&P 500 has been pretty steady here. But the bigger question is, and I think it is the short-term question, is will it be able to break upwards? We have seen a number of shares accelerating higher recently. There has been a great deal of good news priced in to a considerable number of shares. iRobot has gone from about $54 to $84 in really just the last 10 weeks. So this has been a remarkable advance. I don't think that there is anybody wouldn't look at, for example, Facebook. And it came out with its earnings last night, and there has been a lot of good news already priced in, and was a little bit softer in here today. So the reality is that we're still in a bullish environment from the medium term. But we know what the challenges are. And then we're also towards the end of the most favorable period of time for stock markets. So it is not beyond the bounds of possibility by any stretch of the imagination that we get a somewhat bigger pullback between now and September. And I think that the most important point is that being forewarned is forearmed, but also that you don't pay up. That, you know, when you've got something that has already had a substantial run on the upside, to remember that the best time to buy is following a pullback. And given that we are towards the end of the most favorable period, the chances are that we will be given, we will be afforded the opportunity to buy at somewhat better prices, because it continues to represent a generally bullish environment over the medium term. And oil prices coming down, that is important, that they were testing 60, they're coming back, they're at 45 on WTI, or close enough. And every $10 decline in oil prices adds about 0.1% to GDP. So those are very important points, that oil prices are unlikely to represent the kind of headwind to growth that we have been conditioned to expect over much of the last decade. That's also particularly good news for somewhere like Europe, which is a clear importer. And the European, the Euro stocks, which is all the Euro-denominated shares, is back up testing its 2015 high in here right now. And if we are in fact going to have higher interest rates, then I think that Japan is really worth keeping an eye on. That it was a country that was attempting to fight deflation in one of the greatest disinflationary periods globally in history. And they badly need inflation. That was certainly something, you know, and that has conditioned the psychology of the population as well. That was abundantly clear from walking around the streets of Tokyo last month. And it's probably the country that could benefit most from a return to inflationary pressures. So the Nikkei is coming back up towards this 20,000 level. The yen, we continue to have this inverse correlation between the fortunes of the yen